Hi, and welcome to Puerto Podcast. This is a new series where I meet and talk with different companies, so you listeners can get to know the company and the persons behind it. Please reach out to me or anyone else at Puerto if you would like us to meet a specific company or person. The episode today will be in English, since I have an English-speaking guest with me here today, or actually Danish-speaking guest, but we will do it in English. Today I will talk with Lars Etterup, CEO of Linkfire, who founded the company in 2014 to simplify marketing for the growing music industry. In short, what Linkfire does is providing the music industry with smart links, which we will hear all about later on.
Information provided in this podcast should not be considered investment advice. Please see our website peritosec.com/compliance for a complete disclaimer and more information.
In this episode, we will talk about the music industry and Linkfire's part in it, why 2022 became such a tough year for the company, Linkfire's path to profitability, and why Etterup is excited about the future. Warm welcome, Lars Etterup.
Thank you so much, Matilda, and thanks for having me. And and thanks for wanting to speak English. We tried before we started here speaking in Swedish and Danish, and decided upon English.
So, yes. Yes. So, SmartLinks, software as a service. Could you explain your business model?
Yes, of course. So we live in a digital world, and music is very digital these days as well, with streaming services is the primary spot where you listen to music. The common denominator is that when you have artists or labels that wants to promote new songs or tickets or shows, they use links online to connect people from A to B. And we act as an intermediary. We are a software component there that helps artists and labels promote their songs and their live shows and their albums and so forth. So we provide links that their fans will click on, and we'll send the fans then either into Spotify, to Apple Music, to Deezer, to Amazon Music, and you name it, and so forth. And we do this at scale. So we work with all the big record labels globally, all the big artists. And we sent more than 2 billion fans last year into different services, basically.
So many of you have probably seen, if you go, for example, to Justin Bieber's Instagram page and click on his link in his bio, you get to Linkfire. And then you can choose if you want to listen to his music on Spotify, if you want to go to his merch shop, etc.
Yes, exactly. So that's the very basic of our value proposition. And so it can be on social media, it can be on behind advertising, it can be emailed, it can be QR codes. It's pretty much anywhere you can interact digitally. We can be that intermediary that can then help guide the fans into where they want to consume or where the artist would like the fans to consume.
And do you get a fee every time someone click on the link, or how does it work?
Yeah, so we have a two-sided business model. So on one side, we are a pure SaaS business where we get paid for artists and labels and so forth using our service. So we have different tiers depending on what features they would like. And then we have another side of the business where we earn a commission, or you could say a bounty of some sort, also called affiliate commissions and so on, whenever we drive some sort of value to that end destination. So that could be a new sign up to a streaming service, it could be a ticket purchase, it could be a t-shirt sale, NFT sale. So as soon as there is some sort of value transaction, then there could be a bounty for us. And of course, when you have that many people, fans, going through your links, it's a volume game, essentially.
How fierce is the competition? How is the technology behind this and the barriers to entry?
We get asked that quite a lot, because on the surface of things it seems so simple.
It looks simple as well.
And that's the point. It should be simple for everyone to use, for artists and for us fans and consumers to use. And obviously we make links, and links have existed since the dawn of the internet. But what we do is we do it at scale. We automatically create these links. We have a very, very deep search engine underneath the hood that actually knows you use Justin Bieber as an example. We know where all Justin Bieber's songs are located, where all his albums are located across, streaming services. We know where his t-shirts are. We know where his NFTs are. And so that basically means that we can connect fans to any of these services real time. So the method is a link, but underneath is really a really big search engine that can help send people into the right direction.
So is it the data that is valuable here?
Data is very valuable. It's I mean, we know so much about music, about entertainment. And so that is the difficult part, obviously, to copy that. It's also difficult to get in position that we have now, where we work with all the major record labels, big artists, a growing long tail of artists as well. So there's also some economics of scale that is a strong defensibility position that we have. We have really good relationships with all the different streaming services, ticketing services as well. And so there are obviously competitors out there that see what we're doing and are servicing artists and fans similar. But there's only really one big competitor that are doing it at scale that we are doing globally at scale. That is an Australian company called Linktree. And they are not focused only on music and entertainment. They're focused very broad. So also on NASCAR drivers and chefs and, you know, very broad. I think about 200 different industries as well. So they don't have the same depth of technology as we have within the entertainment sector. They have more of a broader range.
You have also some, as you said before, great partnership and connections to the record labels, etc. Is that a unique selling point for you?
Yeah, so the music industry is still very dominated. About there's about three major record labels that have around 75-80% market share of the music industry. And that is Universal Music, Sony Music, and Warner Music. So all familiar names probably in daily speak. And we work with them on a global basis. And then there are obviously smaller record labels all the way down to smaller bedroom artists that, you know, will publish a song, put it straight on Spotify and so on. And so we work with both ends of that spectrum, really where we started and created a strong, a unique stronghold was that we worked with these big labels and thereby their big artists as well for close to a decade now. So we really, really have, how you can say, the majority of the music industry working with us, and where we are seeing a lot of growth is in the long tail among all the smaller creators.
You also have a partnership with Amazon.
Yes.
Tell me about
that.
Yeah,
so obviously when we have that many fans that we send into different services, And we would like to work with all the streaming services, have closer relationship, negotiate some bounties if we help create some sort of value transaction to them, but also a data play, get some data back so we can tell the artists and the labels what did people do when they ended up in Amazon or in Apple or in Spotify and so on. And so we aim to strike more of these closer relationships with Amazon, with Spotify, with Apple, with all the big ones out there. And so that's typically the nature of the deals. It's some sort of data sharing agreement so we can create an even better service to our users. It's typically a bounty or an affiliate agreement. So we agree that if we help with X amount of users, X million amount of users in these countries, there'll be this amount of revenue for us, and we will then facilitate that back to the label or the artist as well.
You went public in 2021 and then everything looked good. But what happened then? You hired a lot of staff and you took on great expenses and you got some financial problems. Please tell us about 2022.
I think it's difficult to summarize it. I mean, there are so many things that happened. You know, there's obviously the macroeconomic environment all of a sudden changed almost a half year after we listed in First North Premier. Then our share price went down.
It collapsed, basically.
It collapsed, yeah, quite significantly. And Meanwhile, we were obviously gearing up, as we agreed in the IPO with the investors, that we would, you know, focus on growth. And here in 22, we actually had our best year of growth, you know, over 50% growth, performing really well on all parameters. But some of the things that we invested in just didn't materialize fast enough for it to contribute to our growth. And we were basically looking to see if we can use some depth to kind of, you know, carry that, wait it out a little bit. And because our market cap went down so far, we basically, our depth to market cap mm-hmm. ratio was, it was impossible for us to borrow more money. So we ended up in a situation where, you know, the plan that we had, we could see that, yes, it would materialize, there would be even more growth, but we basically just had to make some decisions. And so why did our valuation go down so much? Why did the share price plummet? Obviously, there can be many reasons for that. Obviously, how you can say, we weren't a profitable business. We invested everything in growth. We didn't have profitability on the target for the first 12 months because of the market changed. Obviously, that was what everyone was looking for. We had to adapt to that as well. Some of our key numbers, revenue numbers, were a bit slower at kicking in. That took an effect as well. And something that we see materializing now, but we invested in early on. Then it's also, we had low liquidity, basically, in the market. It was a very low liquidity market. We had to figure out, how do we come out with the good news? How do we create awareness among retail investors very much? Because we've always had good conversations with bigger institutional investors and so on. But how do we create interest and awareness among retail investors? And I think a lot of company in the growth market on our stage has that dilemma, trying to get to target industry, trying to, you know, create that awareness and so on. And that's something that we had to, how you can say, work on as well.
Mm.
So there's no single event. I mean, I'm quite proud of how we as a business are growing. We continue to perform. We have, you know, the best year ever, the best quarter here in Q4, and a really, really positive trajectory as well. I think in hindsight, maybe we should have just not invested that aggressively and slowed down a little bit. But again, that's what we promised the investors, that we would invest in growth, and then market changed and then everything else followed. So.
So how did this turn, how did you manage to do this this turn and slow down and becoming more focused on profitability?
I mean, we know which initiatives are, you know, giving a decent return fast and which are more, you know, prospecting and so forth that we could see. And so it was quite easy for us to basically say, okay, now we need to turn off the things that, you know, will return value in 12, 18, 24 months and focus on the things, you know, that are returning value in the next 3 to 6 months. And that obviously meant stopping some of the initiatives that we had recently hired for. And so we basically cut away those sides of the business and cut into the bone. And now we have, you could say, a healthier business. We are focusing on the core of our business, servicing artists and labels. There's really good growth in that, and there's really good profitability in that. We've lowered our growth expectations a bit, our 20 to 40% rather than 50 to 70%. But I then also gone out and said we will reach break even, both EBITDA and cash flow here in 23. So we've just changed the focus a little bit here for 23. Company's in good spirit. We're still servicing our customers and doing what we do best, but less 12 months, 24 months thinking right now.
But do you think you waited too long to get in, taking new money?
If we wait, I mean, I think in hindsight we hired aggressively. It was also, you know, if I look back a little bit, it was a fight for talent at that time. You know, like it was just, you really had to get the brightest. It's still a fight for talent, but the market has just changed a bit. I think in hindsight we should have hired less aggressively. Obviously we don't control where the share price is and what happens there. And if the share price had stayed more stable, then we probably wouldn't have needed to raise at all, because we actually had debt lined up to basically secure operations. That's what we said on our earnings calls as well. It's like, we don't see any issue. And then it just kept dropping and became an issue all of a sudden. So that's why we ended up raising equity. Mm. We actually wanted to raise some debt initially, because we raised equity here in, was it October or November, at a really, really, really low share price, both compared to the IPO, which was insanely low, but also just compared to peers, basically.
Mm.
So I wish that we wouldn't have had to raise at all.
No.
So,
because you did a direct share issue to Maverick Capital.
Yes, exactly.
So how will you use the money now? How will you...
Yeah, so the money is basically to just ensure that we break even, basically. So the money is there to ensure that we can, you know, land on our feet after the layoffs, secure operations, and then break even, basically.
Mm.
So that's what we're using the funds for now.
Yeah, and now you're aiming for profitability,
yes.
And you're going to do that. You will still continue to grow, but not in the fast pace you did historically, and you will also continue to cut costs.
Yes, I mean we don't have any organizational structure and plan, but we continue to look at every quarter that we spend and figure out how can we optimize this and should we invest in this. So we're very diligent in terms of cost, very diligent in hiring as well. Obviously, you still need talent to win in a competitive market. But we are very diligent. We've just a small example. We've moved office spaces. You know, it's a small thing, but it's also a strong signal to send to investors and also to our employees that now it's a different hat that we have on now. We need to be more diligent. We were also diligent before, but there was just a growth mindset, and now it's way more a profitability mindset.
Mm.
We've already had 1 month of profitability, so it's not something that we're uncertain of and so on. It's something that we can see in the very near future. We don't come with like this quarter will hit profitability, because it obviously depends on cash inflow and stuff like that as well, but it's in the very near future. So I think, you know, end of 23 will be a really, really healthy company, strong growth. Obviously we hope to exceed the guidance that we've given, but we just want to be careful.
Mm.
We set 20 to 40% revenue growth. Historically, we've been in the 40% range over the past four years. And for us to break even requires 22% growth.
Mm.
So,
and also cut costs with 14 million from...
optimizing operations, basically. Mm. Like I said, we don't have any plans of doing organizational restructuring or layoffs as such, but there is many ways where we can optimize operations. Some deals we've in order to, you know, get certain clients, we've been flexible in terms of some payment terms and so on. So there are different things where we're changing that behavior now.
Mm. So your targets for 2023 are EBITDA profitability and gross margins of 80%.
Yeah. Yeah, we are just around 80% now.
Mm.
As we are getting better at servicing fans, sending them into the different shops and services, as we improve our relationships with the Spotify's, with the Apple Music's as well, that comes at a very high gross margin, because the traffic is already there. It's just a matter for us to service it the best way. So we aim and will keep having a pretty high gross margin. And that's obviously something that, you know, it's not gonna not going to cost more for us, and so we'll see improved performance on those metrics as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was a quite heavy conversation.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I think it's you know, I guess your primary listeners are other investors, but if there are other, you know, founders or CEOs as well, I think it's very healthy to talk about these things, because, you know, we do our very best to grow the business and to operate in this fast changing environment. Now we've just seen that, you know, there's stuff happening with SVB here the past 24 hours, and a lot of my colleagues are, you know, going crazy and figure out how are they exposed, you know, financially, operationally as well. So there are things that are happening these days very, very fast where you have to adapt, and sometimes you don't adapt fast enough. And the strongest ones, the ones that, you know, adapt, they're the ones that persevere. That's how I believe it.
How will you work with transparency and maintain the trust from investors going forward?
That's a good question. I mean, we try to be as transparent as we can. It's still a very founder-led company. It's still me and the CFO doing all the earnings calls. We try to be better at communicating. That's some of the things that we've decided that we need to step that game up significantly, is doing more frequent investor communication. We have a very good business, but that will be evident in the numbers. That will be evident in the quarters to come. We've delivered really well on the past few quarters as well. So I think to be able to deliver, to show that as well, and to be more frequent in our communication. I think transparency, we've always aimed to be very transparent. We're very open, but just increasing the frequency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how will you continue to grow?
Yeah. One of the growth avenues that we are following a lot is we can see that in the music industry, there is a growing long tail of smaller artists, smaller creators, over 50 to 100 million of these smaller ones. We are very big in the head of the market, so all the Justin Biebers and so on. And we can see that there's a lot of growth potential in the long tail, both on a subscription basis, but also on a traffic and monetization basis there. So that's some of the avenues that we're chasing right now. We recently had an investor that came in the first tranche here as well, Maverick Capital, yes, but also a guy called Meng Ru Cook. I think that's how we pronounce the name, who is the CEO of a company called BandLab. And obviously we're working on interesting things with them as well, but they have, I think they have 60, 70 million of these very small users. And so that's obviously interesting for us. So when you create a song, you need a link to you know. And so we're trying to see how can we grow fast in the long tail and within these. We have a really good organic acquisition engine here, but how can we leapfrog? How can we come into and say, you know, we can go from X to in the millions, basically. And so that's very much what we're looking at, because we have the technology and the product.
Mm. But it's still growth in the subscription revenue that's the big...
It's both. Yeah. So it carries both things. When we get a new user into the platform, there can be a subscription element, and then there is a monetization element of the traffic. So it's both-sided. We will see subscription continue to grow at a healthy pace.
And looking like beyond 2023, what trends are you seeing, and why? Where do you hope to, like, make new businesses?
I still believe in what we did when we IPO'd. The fact that our links can be used in many different places, not just when an artist are promoting themselves, but we basically can link fans to any of these products in so many different places. We've been talking with Roblox, for example, when fans interact inside Roblox, play games, and so we have different links inside the game where we can then send them into streaming services. So there's so many different avenues of growth for us that we are not chasing right now. It's a little bit of a more of a long term, but that's where the opportunity for going even bigger lays. But right now, within the next foreseeable future, in the next 2-3 years, just in the long tail growth, there is a lot. There's a lot of growth there.
Thank you so much for this honest and interesting interview, Lars Etterup. I look forward to follow you and your journey going forward.
Thank you for having me.
The information provided in this podcast should not be considered professional advice and is not intended to constitute investment advice. Investing and trading in all types of securities involve considerable risk at all times, and past performance is not necessarily a guarantee of future performance. Pareto Securities does not accept any form of liability, neither legally nor financially, for any direct or indirect loss or expense that may arise from the use of information provided in this podcast. Please see our website paretosec.com/compliance for more information and full disclaimer.